They tell the story of the research scientist who wanted above everything else in the world to find the universal solvent. He wanted to find something that would dissolve anything and everything that life had to offer, every metal, every material, every solid, everything. As they tell the story, he worked hard, and he finally discovered a universal solvent, but then he was very, very disappointed because he couldn't find anything to keep it in. Now, you'll get that in a minute, maybe. Couldn't find anything to keep it in because it dissolved everything that this world had to offer. I suggest to you this morning that the Bible suggests that resentment is that kind of solvent. There's absolutely no container that can hold resentment. The human heart, whether Christian or otherwise, it can't take resentment into the heart and contain it there, isolate it there, hold it tightly, and not be mightily impacted by it. The Bible tells us that resentment really does eat the container. The Apostle Paul said to husbands in Colossians chapter 3, verse 19, he said, "Husbands, love your wives and be not bitter against them." Now, Paul knew that a bitterness in the heart of a spouse can ultimately destroy the human heart. He knew that a person, even if they went to church every service, read their Bible every day, they might sing the song of Zion and pray the right prayers and give the right amount of money and be at Bible study and do all of the right things and yet have a gnawing resentment inside the heart. And if they do, it totally nullifies the life that's being lived. Ephesians chapter 4, verse 31, Paul said, now listen to me. Listen to me, he said, Put away bitterness and malice and unkindness. Put away all of these things. Now that you are in Christ Jesus, now that Jesus is a part of your life and you are a part of Him, put away all these things. And the chief number one thing that He says to put away is bitterness or resentment. Now, the reason for such a strong indictment is that bitterness is not a single sin. It actually will manifest itself in many, many different ways. You remember when the Hebrew writer was talking about Esau? Hebrews chapter 22, chapter 12, I'm sorry. In Hebrews chapter 12, he talks about Israel. He talks about Esau, and he talks about all the experiences that they have in the past. And then he says, now, remember Esau. Esau, who lost everything he had. He gave away part of it, sold it cheaply to Jacob. That's the birthright. And the rest was stolen from him. When it came time for the blessing, it was taken from him. Then he said, beware. This is Paul writing, the Hebrew writer writing. He said, beware lest in any of you there should be a root of bitterness. See, bitterness is the thing that if it gets in the human heart, it's the kind of thing that when it gets there, it's not a branch. It's not a vine. Hebrew writer says it's a root. A root. And a root that goes into the ground branches out at the top. And it goes all different ways and it manifests itself in a lot of different ways. He says it's a root of bitterness. Esau's heart was plagued with bitterness. And if bitterness ever gets into our heart and finds intense lodgment there, it'll begin to affect even the godly life in a hundredfold ways. And so we're told by Scripture, be careful, beware, lest a root of bitterness makes its way into your life. Do you realize there are things that we all carry around in this life? We have different ones, but a root of bitterness changes your heart, changes the way you talk, changes the way you think, changes the way you act, changes your facial expressions, changes your attitude, it changes the way you feel. How would you feel if every morning when you got out of bed, you had a backpack that you left packed there next to your bed, and the first thing you did when you got out of bed, there's a 50-pound backpack, and you grabbed it and you put it on. Put the straps around your shoulders, put the backpack on, and you went in to shave, got the backpack on. You sat down to eat breakfast, drink your coffee, you got a 50-pound backpack on. It's heavy, it's difficult, it's uncomfortable, it's burdensome. Can you imagine how people would look at you? You'd come into work and they'd say, who's the fella with the backpack? Well, that's the boss. Why does he carry a backpack with him? I don't know. Nobody knows. He just carries it with him everywhere he goes. Doesn't he get tired of it? Oh, yes. Doesn't it put him in a bad mood? Oh, it sure does. Well, why does he wear it then? Don't know. He just started wearing it years ago, and he never goes anywhere without it. He keeps doing it. Now, if you can visualize that, if you can visualize that in your mind, someone who takes resentment into their heart, makes it the root of all their actions, and they never go anywhere without it. Even though they go to church, even though they do all the right things, even though they smile, the cover-up smiles, there's always that ugly resentment that colors every action, every word, and all of their behavior, everything they do. People say, well, why do they act that way? Don't know. He's just bitter. She's just bitter about something. Been this way for years. Something in his heart, in her heart, that just constantly wells up and they never quite get over it. God says that's what you got to get rid of. You cannot harbor that. It's a universal solvent, and it's going to dissolve any container you try to put it in, especially the Christian heart. Somebody says, well, okay, I hear what you're saying, and I understand what we're supposed to do. I understand I'm supposed to have a pure heart, not a bitter heart, and I need to get rid of it. And I need to say, this is not right, it's not good, and you're correct in that. But they say, let me tell you something. I have every right to feel my resentment. You just don't understand. You don't know what they did to me. And I have every right to be bitter. It's certainly easy and understandable to claim our rights and justify our feelings. We have a tendency to say, if you only knew how they treated me, if you only understood what happened to me, years ago, or recently maybe, last week maybe, they cheated me out of my inheritance years ago, and I've been mad and bitter at my family ever since. If you only knew how my husband acted, if you only knew how he treated me, if you only knew how my wife nags me, is on my case all the time. you'd understand. Maybe it's our brethren. You say, I cannot believe that those in the family of God would treat me the way they treated me. No wonder it boils out. You see, we have justification. We feel justified to feel the way that I feel. And you know, you're probably right. Probably right. Those things did happen. You say, doesn't the Bible teach justice and fairness and right doing? Yeah. Then I've got a right to feel as I feel. You may be precisely correct in that this morning. But I got to tell you, the Bible still says, it still says with all of the justification, the root of bitterness in your heart called resentment is still a destructive force and you cannot afford it. We think we're hurting other people by being bitter and resentful. Not so. We cannot afford it. I'm sure Esau's life was blighted by the cheating that Jacob gave him. I'm sure that what caused a Hebrew writer to talk about a root of being bitter in the heart must have been what happened to Esau. But you must not allow, we cannot allow for the sake of our own preservation to be bitter towards people. We can't allow other people to decide how we're going to feel. I read an article some years ago about a man who lived in New York City. He had a friend come from the South, from Texas, to go up to New York City to spend the week with him. And in this article, they were talking about the differences of the mentalities and the flavor of what you would find on the sidewalks and the streets. And in the article, they talked about how the man who was the native of Manhattan, the first day they were there, they went up to a newsstand, and a newsboy that was running the newsstand, and he asked the young man, he said, I'd like to have a morning paper. And he gave him a surly sort of answer, and he just threw the paper at him across the counter, and the man very politely said, thank you. Boy didn't say a word. Finally, as they walked away, the friend from Texas said, I don't understand that. He's selling papers. And I never saw anybody that wants to sell anything have that kind of an attitude. But what really surprised me was how courteous you were to him. He was rude to you. The man from New York said, oh, that. He said, he's that way every morning. The guy from Texas said, you mean you put up with this every day? He said, yeah, I do. He said, why in the world would you put up with that kind of behavior? And the man gave a very startling answer. He said, I decided long ago I'm not going to allow him to decide how I'm going to act. I will not allow him to set the tone of my day. You ever realized how much we put ourselves in other people's hands? We really do. We open ourselves up, and if they're rude to us, we feel justified about it, and then we get depressed, or we get bitter, or we get resentful. We let them tell us, this is how you're going to feel today. This is how you'll behave today. This is how you're going to act today. But you've always got that option. I've always got that option. Sure, it's ugly. Sure, it's mean. Sure, it's cruel. But we can say, I have decided not to let them affect my day. I have decided. That's the key. Those are the key words. I'm making a decision. They can act the way they want to. They can feel the way they want to. I'm not going to feel that way. I'm not going to behave that way. You say, well, that all sounds wonderful. It's nice to say I'll take charge of my life. It's a fantastic idea. I certainly know that's what we ought to do, but how do you do it? How does one accomplish that? Let me share with you very quickly some things that I believe Scripture suggests along this line. First of all, 1 Corinthians 13. 1 Corinthians 13 is a very well-known passage. We love to use this passage at weddings and funerals and just all kinds of occasions. It's a great passage on love. Love. But if you'll read in the RSV, the Revised Standard Version, here's how they render it. They render it and say, love is not resentful. Love is not full of resentment. Now that's the RSV. If you look at the ASV, the American Standard Version, it renders it this way. It says, love does not take an account of evil. Does not take an account of evil. The NIV says, love keeps no record of wrongs. But the RSV says, love is not resentful. Now, how do you get from taking account of evil or keeping a record of wrongs to resentful? Well, I'm going to try to help you connect the dots here. Have you ever known anybody that carried with them, metaphorically, a resentful notebook? You've known these people. You may do it yourself. A resentful notebook. Something happens. First thing they do is they whip out the notebook. And they write it down. Mentally. Well, I'm not going to put up with this. And I'm not going to forget this happened. And since you did this to me, I'm going to find something to make you pay for it. If I can't make you pay, I'm still going to hold it against you the rest of my life. Because I've got it there in my resentful notebook. And I'm going to be angry. I'm going to be bitter. And if I ever get an opportunity to get you back, you better believe I'm going to get you. And so we make those entries in the resentful notebook. Paul says love's not resentful. Love doesn't take an account of evil. Love doesn't total up the ledger book of all the wrongs, all the offenses, and say, I'm going to remember that. I will remember it. No, that's not the way love behaves. You say, well, how do I move to that spot? How do I jump from where I am? And how do I jump to that place? Love's great. It's wonderful. And I'd love to be there, but I'm not there. I'm here. And I feel resentment. How do I move from here to that spot that you just described? Probably the same way God does. You get right down to it. If anybody has a right to be resentful, God does. He created us. He made us. He's given us blessings after blessing after blessing. Particularly those of us in the church, in the kingdom. If anybody can be justified for feeling resentful, it'd be God. How often do we let Him down? 1 Corinthians 13 gives the context here to understand it. If you'll read the characteristics of love as Paul states them, this special, divine, God-willed love of the heart. It's the kind of love that thinks of others. That's a mechanism if we choose to use it. And if we choose to use it, it'll work. I walk into a situation and I've got to make a decision of how I'm going to act here, if the first thing crosses my mind is if I'm going to think of others, I'm going to put them ahead of me, what would I do? If I'm going to act the way Jesus would act, what would I do? If I'm thinking of others right now, how would I feel about the people? That one insight will change your life immensely if you just learn to do it. It would change your situation, the social situation, one-on-one situations, your whole spectrum of living, if I just think of others. God is an other thinker. God thinks of others. You know why God doesn't get resentful of us? Oh, there's all kinds of reasons, and I realize He's divine. He's a creator. But Psalm 103, verses 13 and 14, interesting passage. It has always intrigued me. I love this passage. David's riding along and he's describing God and he says, God pities us as a father pities his children. Why, David? For he remembers that we are dust. We are dust. I mean, what can you expect from a pile of dust? I mean, they're just dust. Can't you hear God having that thought? They're just a pile of dust that's fearfully and wonderfully designed and made, but it's still, at the end of the day, a fallible pile of dust. So God doesn't get frustrated at us. He deals lovingly with us. David says, because he knows that we're just dust. When you look at that, and you begin to say, no wonder, and you begin to understand, why keep on an account of evil here? You try to understand where they're coming from, their problems. You try to understand people of what caused it to happen. And you put them first. Now, it doesn't mean it's right. Just because you have decided that you're going to act lovingly towards a bad situation doesn't mean they're right. And I got to tell you something else here. Another point, probably the toughest point that you got to realize here, in my opinion. It doesn't necessarily mean they're going to change. That's the hardest part about it, I think. That if I can control myself and I can return good for evil, it's no assurance they're going to change. The cause of your resentment may not be altered. It may stay the same. Remember the Apostle Paul, 2 Corinthians 12, he looked up to God and he said, God, I've got this thorn in the flesh. I've asked you three times to get rid of it. God, will you please do something about it? And the answer came back, my grace is sufficient for you. God said, Paul, I got a better idea. I'm not going to give you a better situation. I'm going to give you more endurance and more grace. I'm not going to give you a lighter burden. I'm going to give you a stronger back so you can carry it. I'm not going to take away the pain, but I'm going to give you the grace to endure the pain so you can become something I want you to become. And Paul had to be content with that and say, okay. Okay, I accept it. I understand. You see, we always want the resentment to go away by tackling the cause and taking the cause away. We want the thorn out of our flesh. But it may not happen that way. Sometimes people just don't change for us, but we can change ourselves. Some years ago, I was on the campus of one of our Christian universities at a lectureship. And I was in a class that, I don't remember what the class was about, but it was well attended. There were probably 100, 150 people in this class. And I was interested in the class, and class got started, but pretty quick into it, this fella sitting two rows back started coughing. And I don't mean a little kind of quiet cough. I mean a loud, agonizing, just horrid cough. And he just kept coughing. And he just kept coughing. And once he started, it seemed like he's not ever going to quit coughing. And he was disturbing the whole class. You could tell looking around, people were getting irritated. I was getting irritated. I wanted to hear what the guy had to say. And I was thinking, fellow, why don't you get up and leave? Do you not see you are destroying this classroom? And I was really, really getting pretty upset and irritated about this. And then all of a sudden, I don't know why. I don't know why I thought about this, but I decided, well, I have nothing else I can do about it. I'm not getting anything out of the class anyway, other than listening to his cough. I'm going to just start counting how many times he coughs. And every time he coughed, I'd make a mark on the program there. And he'd cough again, I'd make a mark. And he'd cough, and I'd make another mark. And I kid you not, before long, I was cheering him on. I was thinking, we may be setting some kind of world record here. I don't know. And I found myself thinking, fella, if you just cough two more times, we're going to hit 50 here. And I found myself going, come on, you can do it. You can, come on, cough. Cough. Say, what's that got to do with anything? This. I didn't change what was taking place. I didn't change the behavior of the fella who was irritating me. I changed one thing. Changed my attitude. I changed my approach towards it. You see, the bottom line is this. You won't know where I'm going with this. Here it is. I only have two choices, and you do too. Two choices. Number one, I can let somebody else ruin my life. Or number two, I'm not going to let them ruin my life. Now, those are the two choices. And if I don't want to have a vicious, scowling countenance when I'm old, if I don't want my stomach eaten up with stomach ulcers, if I don't want to look 85 when I'm only 35, I'm going to have to make a decision. And the decision is, I'm not going to let it happen. I'm going to look at it another way. I'm going to twist it around, and I'm going to turn it to where I can stand it. How much resentment is allowable in a Christian heart? How much can you have and get by with it? A lot of folks say, I don't have much. For the most part, I'm good. I just got about 2%. There's just a few people that really, really irritate me. And I've just got about 2% down here. The rest of me is pretty good. How much resentment is allowable in a Christian heart? Paul said zero. Nil. Nothing. There's no minimum because it is so destructive. Justified or unjustified? Whether you've got a right to feel it or not. You can't handle it. You can't handle it. It is true that rat poisoning is 98% cornmeal, harmless. It's the 2% that kills. It's the 2% that gets the rat. Resentment is the universal solvent of the human heart. It will dissolve any container it's in. Don't try to house it. Don't try to toy with it. You can decide, I will let it and let somebody else ruin my life, or I won't. That's the decision. Decide for God. Decide for Jesus. Right now, as we stand and as we sing.